The podcast with everything paranormal. It's the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your host, Joe Shorty.
Me.
Joe Shortridge and his sister.
And Jen.
Me.
Woohoo!
Yes. Congratulations, Joseph.
Yes.
You are number five.
We are. But first off, I want to thank you, the listener, for sticking in with us. Even if this is your first show, welcome. But if you've been listening to us for the past 4 years, thanks. And hopefully we got a lot of great shows coming up after this one.
We made it to show 202.
202.
Wow, that's exciting. I know. It's been a long journey, but we've learned a lot along the way.
Yeah, this is a heartfelt thank you to the listeners.
Yeah, and you guys are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a chance to meet you guys at any of the conventions yet this year, which is kind of a bummer because I love going to the conventions and meeting everybody and talking and seeing our paranormal family.
I know. I miss everybody.
But we're going to be back at the conventions after all this stuff is over with.
Yes. Yeah. We'll all be together again.
Okay. Yeah.
But we're together now.
And I want to thank the website FeedSpot, yes, who ranked us fifth in the world for the top five paranormal podcasts,
yes,
you must listen to again.
Yeah.
It's the second year they put us in the rankings, and this year we're at five. I don't remember where we were at last year.
I think we're at five.
Oh, really? Okay.
But, you know, it's the top 20 paranormal podcasts that you need to listen to, and we made number five, but we're in the top five with Mysterious Universe.
Yeah, we're right below. Well, number one is Someone.
Yeah, we're not mentioning it.
Tim Dennis's show.
That's right.
Tim Dennis is awesome.
Hi, Tim.
Yeah.
We love Tim.
The second one I've never heard of. It's Oh No, Ross and Carrie. I'm going to have to look that up. I haven't had a chance to. And then number three, Jim Harold's Paranormal Podcast, which is
amazing.
Like, that is the one that I inspired to put out this show because he is like, I don't want to call it, I know Adam Carolla is the podfather, but he's like the podfather.
He's the paranormal podfather.
Yeah, he is. And then Mysterious Universe, which is unbelievably huge.
Amazing.
And then 222 Paranormal Podcast.
Yes.
And like I said, I don't know about number two, rest of these all have huge staff that take care of their podcast.
I know, like.
Researchers, like Mysterious Universe has like 12 researchers. And
it's crazy. We have each other.
We do it all. We are the. I would like to thank the whole staff of 222.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. And I'd like to thank the staff as well. Wait, real applause.
The researchers.
Real applause for Joe.
The producers, the directors, the editors, the.
The social media manager.
Yeah.
But no, it's been really, really fun. And, you know, we have tons of really cool shows coming up. And won't be long. We'll be in our fifth season.
Yeah,
we're heading that way.
If you guys want to... My voice squeaked again.
Squeaky. I'm going to call you Squeaky Shortridge from
now on. If you want to... If you want to support the show a little bit, I just made up a bunch of t-shirts. Jen made up a bunch of t-shirts.
We post them on the 222 page.
Yeah, I'm going to link it up on our website. Not this week, but next week. It'll probably be up there. I'm going to lower the price on them to like $17 just because, I mean, there's people out there selling t-shirts at $35, $40. And it's like, if you want to support someone, you're not going to spend that much money on it, okay?
Yeah, but I created a really cool one. You guys have to go and check it out. It's on our Facebook page.
All right.
It's just a way to give back. You know, we don't ask for much, and we put this out.
I do.
Joe does.
I ask for everything.
But it just helps support the show, you know, and we love bringing the show to you guys and hope you enjoy it. And
we're going to be back out to the conventions with our crystals and our dowsing rods and all that stuff.
Bigfoot dolls
and Bigfoot little statuettes that I have down there on the floor that we forgot we bought.
We forgot. But I just miss like seeing everybody and being able to go to the conventions and hanging out with everybody and hearing real ghost stories. Like, I do have an update. Would you like me to give you my update, Joe?
I do want to congratulate you on your phone call that you had.
Thanks.
Dave, a lot of you guys don't know who this person is, but Dave Jackson, he is the School of Podcasting. He's been podcasting since 2008.
I think, did he start it?
It's pretty much, yeah, him and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, he's like the godfather of podcasting. So he works for one of the podcasting hosting sites now, but he has had this for what?
I think he is on show 600 and something of the school and podcast, but he also has like six other podcasts that he does.
He's amazing. And he called in with, you know, wanted to know about our podcast and asked some advice and gave us some really good feedback. So, you know, we just want to give a shout out
to him. And ask you for advice.
I know. Like, hey.
Hey,
Dave.
Then, somewhere on our Facebook page, we have a picture with us and him.
Yeah, we actually ran into, well, we didn't run into him. We met him at a podcasting convention that
Podfest.
Podfest, that's it. A couple of years ago, Joe and I went. Joe was a big winner. He won a bunch of swag. And I think I won a little something. I can't remember. Did I win something or was it? I don't know. Remember. But anyways, yeah, we had a really great time. We learned a ton about podcasting and met some really fun people in the podcasting world. But no, I got to talk to Dave, and he's just one of those people who's just always like really encouraging and
super down to earth.
Yeah.
I mean, like, super down to earth.
You know, we're fan geeking out, and he's like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, oh my God, it's Dave Jackson! And he's from Ohio, so he's extra cool, right?
Ohioan.
Yes. So, anyways.
Let's go out west. Let's go way out west.
We are heading out on the Oregon Trail.
To a place. So, as of today, recording, May 18th, 1980 is when Mount St. Helens erupted. And I know a lot of you guys are much younger than us, and you probably don't know what the heck we're talking about, but Mount St. Helens was this snow-covered mountain out in Washington that was actually a volcano. Mm-hmm. And weeks leading up to it, it was bulging, literally like growing 5 foot a day and stuff, and it erupted. And it was a huge eruption. It was the largest landslide in recorded history. And to watch videos of it, there is one video out there. It's not actually a video, but it's like time lapse. Mm-hmm. The person who was out there took a picture of the mountain, how beautiful it looked. And like 5 minutes later, the ground started shaking, and he got his camera back out, and he just kept hitting the shutter. So he got enough video or enough photos of it to make it look like a video. And if you go online, you'll just type in Mount St. Helens eruption. It was unbelievable.
Not to interrupt, but a cat just jumped up on your deck.
Is it the one that's...
He's all calico color.
Yeah.
Joe's got a pet.
Orange and all those different colors.
So what's crazy about this is that the ash from the went around the world.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Los Angeles was, like, you couldn't even see the sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was so scary. People were watching this for weeks, and they were just so afraid of it erupting, and then it did.
Yeah.
And people were devastated.
It was, you know, there would be, like, steam coming out of top of it, which drew people to it because they wanted to see that.
Yeah.
And the government actually put a 20-mile radius around the mountain saying, do not go in this 20-mile radius. The mountain is going to explode. And a lot of people didn't believe them, and a lot of people got mad because they had to leave their homes. And there was one guy that refused to leave completely, and he's like, I'm staying here until, you know, I came in this world here, I'm going out, that kind of thing.
Oh, my gosh.
He went out. But I remember as a kid, on our windowsills of our house, there was actually ash.
And we're, what, 3,000 miles away?
Well, you know...
2,500 maybe?
Around there. Now, I did some research on that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It would take me 8 days, 15 hours to ride my bike there. It would take 30 days, 16 hours to walk there.
Dang.
Or 1 day and 12 hours to drive.
That's crazy.
I looked that up. I'm like, I wonder how long it would take to walk there. And
well, if you're in a covered wagon, it would take you 4 months.
But... Yeah, it was unbelievable. I still, to this day, remember finding ash on our windowsills in the bedroom.
Wow.
And knowing that that's where that came from.
That's so crazy. It's probably in our lungs.
Probably. I'm sure we breathed it in.
brief. So when this happened, I remember, I think I was probably like seven. So you were probably 14, 15 or so. No, you would have been younger than that. Well, anyways, I remember it was such a big thing on the news, you know, and of course there was only three channels then, right? Like ABC, NBC, CBS, and it was like nonstop coverage because it was such a devastating thing. You know, air travel had to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, scary.
The mountain, when it blew up, it was there was glaciers up there, and when the mountain actually exploded, when you watch the video of it, you can actually see the whole side of the mountain turned into a giant landslide, because what happened was it started to erupt, and it's so hot that under the ground, they call it the dome, you got magma, but you also have
magma.
Hot liquid magma, and you also have tons of water, which was so hot that if it exposed the air, it instantly turns to steam, and that's what happens. And that's why when you see the explosion, there's huge plumes of smoke. Well, that's actually steam that melted all the water and turned the landslide into a giant waterfall type thing.
Hot waterfall?
Yeah. That so,
like, nothing
burnt people the 20 miles away. Because of the pyroclastic flow and the explosion and the heat. And I remember seeing the thing where there was a helicopter pilot that went up there just as it happened. And he saw a truck that was probably, I want to say, 10 to 15 miles away. And there were footprints coming out of it, but the driver's door was still shut. And he says that the pyroclastic flow hit the truck so fast that the guy still had his hands on the steering wheel, and the passenger still had his hands on his lap, and they were just toast.
Oh my God. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, how many disasters have there been where they keep telling people, you better get out, you better get out?
Yeah.
And they don't want to go.
They don't.
And then they're like, save me. So if that flow came over the mountain. So anything that was in or under the mountain is probably buried, right?
Yeah, yeah. I did see on a video, the person went back to his house. He says, well, here's the top of the refrigerator and it was a deck. And he says, it was about this high. Now look down here and you could actually see the top of his deck, the post for the deck. And he says, 7 feet down is where the floor is. So it was 7 feet of ash
and mud. Goodness.
And you got to remember, when that flow happened, everything in its trees, houses, cars, animals, you know, everything in the path went into the water and was flowing down as it made new rivers and all that.
Oh, my goodness. It just seemed so scary.
Yeah.
Did this trigger any earthquakes? Or did an earthquake trigger the
They think the volcano? Earthquake, because there has been seismic activity on it, and that's why they knew that it was going to erupt. But there was one big earthquake that broke the top of the mountain open, and the minute the top of the mountain opened is when it all just...
Oh, man. It's devastating. But, you know, why we wanted to bring this story to you, because of the 40th anniversary, there were so many animals that were decimated, but in this tragedy, there is reports, and I believe it's true.
Yeah.
It's my belief, that many Sasquatches or Bigfoots were killed or hurt in this, and the government has covered it up.
But
allegedly.
So the legend of the Bigfoots on the mountain go back since before time. You know, the Native Americans said that they would never go on the mountain because, one thing, they called it the Mountain of Fire because there was lava flows out of it. But they also believed that there were another race of giants that lived on the mountain that were cannibals. But the Native Americans actually had a name for these giants, and they called them the Skookums.
Skookums?
Skookums. Aw, poor little Skookums.
Interesting.
And they believed that they were cannibals, okay? And the legend has it that you didn't go up on there because this race of hairy giants lived on Mount St. Helen, and folklore would say that they used to come and steal the children and steal people, take them back up on the mountain and eat them.
Oh, gross.
You know, so I don't know if they were actually cannibals mm-hmm. or it was just stories to keep people off the mountain, but the Native Americans refused to go up on Mount St. Helen.
That's so interesting.
And they believe that the Native Americans said that the Shookum or Skookums, mm-hmm. I'll just say the Bigfoot were there before the Native Americans arrived there. So the Bigfoot had been there for many hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah. And you think, you know, like the progression of the early ancestors coming out of Africa up into mm-hmm. Russia, and then that would have come down into Washington because, you know, when it was Patagonia, whatever that was called,
yeah,
all the land masses land bridge. Were all together. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense that they would live up there.
And that's why they think they came out of Africa that way, is because of that land bridge.
Now, I have a little story here about Mount St. Helens. This is really interesting. So the Northwest Bigfoot legends truly began, it really launched the obsession mm-hmm. with, you know, people being obsessed with Bigfoot and Bigfoot stories. So there was a battle that took place on Mount St. Helens. It's like a narrow gorge that's on the east flank mm-hmm. of Mount St. Helens, and it's called Ape Canyon.
Yeah, which, think about it. There's no apes in the United States, and they call this gorge Ape Canyon.
There has to be a reason for it, mm-hmm. so... In 1924, in the summer, there was a group of gold prospectors that stumbled out of the woods, shaking and glassy-eyed, to tell of a 7-foot-tall ape-like animals that kept attacking them with boulders. So a couple of the guys, Fred Beck, Gabe Lefevre, John Peterson, Marion Smith, and Smith's son, Roy, described what they came upon as gorilla men, where they had built a small cabin for the gold hunting forays. And I have to tell you something about gold hunting. I'll tell you about that after the All story, right. But you guys stay tuned because it's really interesting. So they claimed that they were 8 miles from the Spirit Lake, where they had encountered 4 of the giant animals moving through the forest, erect like humans and taking strides as like a regular man would do. They were covered with long black hair, and the Oregonian, I think that's a newspaper.
Oregonian or something?
That's it. You know me.
Oregon newspaper.
So just make it simple, right? reported that these descriptions that men offered, that their ears were about 4 inches long and stuck straight up. They had 4 toes, short and stubby. And each witness estimated they weighed about 400 pounds. Now that kind of sounds... you know, like ape-like, but mm-hmm. of course we don't have any.
4 toes, too. That's...
They said they were taken aback at the sight of the beast. When Fred Beck fired his rifle at one of the creatures, it struck him 3 times, wounding the animal, and he toppled off a cliff. So Beck reportedly claims years later that another member of his party had fired shots as well. So that night, the men said they were awakened by huge stones being clomped against the outside of the cabin. Then they heard and felt giant bodies slamming against the walls and doors. So the 8 men were seeking their revenge. Beast eventually tore a hole in the roof, allowing them to target Beck. Many of the rocks fell through the hole, and 2 of the rocks struck Beck, one of them rendering him unconscious for 2 hours. Finally, the prospectors said the sun began to come up, and it prompted the animals to break off their attack and slip away. The men poked their heads out the door and then decided the coast was clear and ran out of the woods. Tales of the giant ape men weren't exactly new to the area. Hunters, lumberjacks, prospectors had seen these massive footprints now and again over the years, and Native Americans in the area spoke of mountain devils. That's what that translated to. Few people seriously worried about the possibility of huge unknown creatures being out in the forest, but apparently they were there. They changed, you know, a lot of it changed when the gold hunters returned to civilization in the summer of 1924. The dramatic story of their battle with large human-like beasts was irresistible and thus, you know, hard for people to dismiss, because in those times, you know, like everything was like word of mouth and exciting, and I don't even know if was radio invented in 24 by 24. I don't even know.
But there are a lot of newspaper accounts going back to the 1800s.
Yeah, so news reports and word of mouth causing sensation. The local U.S. Forest Service decided to investigate. So rangers J.H. Huffman and William Welch hiked into the woods with Beck, who took them to the cliff where he said the wounded ape man fell. One of the rangers scrambled down the supposed inaccessible canyon and found nothing. Beck and the rangers continued on to the prospector's cabin, where Beck pointed out the large stones that had been used in the attack. Huffman and Welch weren't impressed, including that the gold miners had probably placed the large rocks or stones there themselves. But the Oregonian reporter asked the rangers when they returned to Kelso, Washington, about the 14-inch long footprints found near the cabin. Huffman created an imprint in the ground using knuckles of his palm and his right hand and said they were made that way. Despite the rangers debunking the story, people still wanted to believe in the tale continued to spread. So friends and acquaintances of the five men who reported their experience are of the belief that they actually saw something that can't be explained. One of the tribe members of the Cowlitz tribe told the reporter that particular creatures were mentioned by all of the elders of the tribe. And he said they described them as 9 to 10 feet tall, large in stature, covered in long hair, and they were only seen traveling at night, which makes sense because I think they're nocturnal. The tribe member also said that they were harmless, and in the years followed, the prospector's story would be repeated time and time again about people seeing it in different theories. But the reporter for the Oregonian in 1974 had reported there were footprints sighted at Lewis River, which is apparently around that area, and said that occasionally campers and motorists have started seeing glimpses of the huge hairy beasts who walk like men and disappeared into the woods. Mm-hmm.
There's so many photographs from the Mount St. Helens area of Bigfoot, too. Mm-hmm. One other thing that I just found out today, so I don't know the gentleman's name.
New news.
But he was talking about how they found bone piles in caves and stuff with actual teeth marks, human-like teeth marks in the bone.
Wow.
That were too big to be human.
Mm-hmm.
And not human piles of bones. I'm talking deer and stuff like that, but bone piles, like something was sitting there eating the animal and some of the bones still had flesh on them and stuff. So I don't know if Bigfoot eat deer, but
I would think so.
The thing is, after the eruption, they were still seeing Bigfoot footprints in the area, even in like the ash and everything. Like mm-hmm. in 1987, there was someone that found footprints, but they found these bone piles, and it looks like something was eating something and just leaving the bones lay in a pile.
That's so interesting.
So something else that came out of the eruption, and that's why we talk about mentioning the eruption, and also, you know, unfortunately, when you're listening to this, it's a few days later, but today is the anniversary. But there was reports of after the eruption, the military went in, the National Guard went in to collect all the bodies of the deer and the wildlife, because thousands of deer and elk and, you know, every kind of bears, everything.
Cougars.
They all were killed because of the eruption. But there was a gentleman that stated that he was part of the team. He went in to make sure nobody went into the area. He was like traffic control. And while he was there, one of the higher up rankers,
he was told military, him, right?
Yeah, okay. He was the National Guard. And his job, like I said, was to watch traffic. But they moved him over and gave him a gun and said, you watch this pile of bodies and no one is to come near this pile. Of course, it was covered up with a tarp, so he just thought it was deer.
Mm-hmm.
So he was guarding it. A helicopter flew in. They dropped a big net. They put this net under this pile, and as they did that, he realized that it was a pile of Bigfoots. And that's why they told him not to let anybody come near this pile. So they were like, well, what are they going to do with these? And the sergeant or whatever basically told him, they're either going to do research on them or something. Mm-hmm. And, but obviously, they probably didn't do research on them. But they ended up taking the bodies out, and they said that they told him that they eventually burned the bodies. So we don't know if they actually took them out to do research on them or if they took them out to burn the bodies.
Now, some of the bodies were already burnt, right?
Oh, yeah. That's another thing is he noticed that the pyroclastic flow came down and killed all the deer and everything. It killed the Bigfoot also, and they separated them. And he said that a lot of the bodies were really badly burnt. Like, most of the hair was burnt off, you know, and they were dead because of it.
Right. It's really sad. Somebody had drew a picture of the helicopter and taking it away, and it looks like one of those Huey. So it was a giant one.
Yeah, it's
right?
The one
like
with the
military.
The one with the double blades.
Oh, okay.
And it's a Sikorsky. I forget the actual name of it, but it's a Sikorsky helicopter that they would take these giant nets and put all the animals in these big nets and take them away to the fire pits because they were afraid that they would basically disease the area if they just let them lay there and rot. So they actually gathered them up. And
people would be questioning.
When they found the Bigfoot bodies, they sequestered them and made sure that nobody saw what was under the big tarp, but that the soldier that was in charge of watching them, he actually saw the bodies, and they saw that they took them away in the helicopter, and they told him never to speak about it. But he was like, you know, it's been back then. It was 20 years since the eruption. He was, I guess, on his deathbed. And he was like, you know, I'm just telling people because what are they going to do to me?
Right.
So with that, there was another story of another gentleman that actually saw a Bigfoot walking with one of the military guys.
Really?
And
I haven't heard this one.
He explained that the military guy was like, you know, what do you see? And the guy's like, I don't believe what I see. And he's like, that's good. You don't see this. You know, and mm-hmm. he was saying, you know, they're up there. They just are another race of people that want to be left alone. You know, so anyways, this guy was walking with one of the Bigfoots and they were going into these caves and the Bigfoot was yelling out, doing calls into the caves and listening for responses. And he says that the Bigfoot was very somber, just like a human would be where mm-hmm. walking through and looking in the caves and trying to find out if the other Bigfoots were in there alive. And they did find a couple of them that were alive. There was one that was so badly burnt. The Bigfoot came out of the cave,
mm-hmm.
looked at him, looked down at the ground, like put his head down and looked down at the ground. And the soldier went in and took the Bigfoot out of its misery.
Oh, man.
But that's all they could do. You know, and they did say that they found some that were alive, and they don't know what they did with them or what, but basically they said, you know, it was a Bigfoot walking around helping. The military was helping the Bigfoot find more Bigfoots.
That gave me goosebumps hearing that. That's it.
But he basically said, they're here. They just want to be left alone.
And why can't we leave them alone?
Yeah.
Leave them be.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to be up in the mountains. You know, we got enough space to live down here in the flatlands, right? There was a request on October 4th of 2016 by a gentleman named Douglas Crispin. He tried to get information from the Freedom of Information Act on this mm-hmm. situation. And the letter that he got back was in response to his request, and it says, information that Bigfoot or Sasquatch bodies were discovered and or recovered just after the eruption of Mount St. Helens. And he was also requesting what sort of body disposal did the Forest Service undertake for the four-legged animals that were killed. It says that the wildlife biologist for Gifford Pinot National Forest conducted the search for responsive records in all locations of reasonable knowledge or professional would believe no records could be located.
Yeah.
So basically they're denying. However, there were two documents consisting of 50 pages located that were partially responsive to two of the items he requested. Those documents created by researchers outside of the Forest Service and are related to work done to located carcasses of elk and deer that they were studying. They were going to provide to him, but I don't know if they ever did. It doesn't have like a response. But then there was a lady who responded to this article. She put on here, this is like just like a month ago,
okay,
that I was 11 years old in 1980 and watched the volcano on Mount St. Helens and got to see a female and a male Sasquatch being helped by ambulances.
See, that's what I mean. It's they actually went in and helped out the, I don't know if that's the ones that they saw with that military guy, but
I'm not sure.
When something like that happens, I mean, it's such a huge, I mean, it's the biggest landslide in U.S. history, or probably world history, that was caught on video. And it's the biggest eruption of a volcano in the United States. And this was a big deal. I mean, it was a big deal. And when something like that happens, even though the Bigfoot don't want to be seen or that, that's going to bring them out. Mm-hmm. And they understand that we're just another part or different type of ape, if you want to call them an ape. You know, I don't think Bigfoots are apes, but we're a different species, and they know that we can help them, and we did. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot more people that helped the Bigfoots than what is known.
I bet. I wonder now, like, what it looks like. I'm sure it's all recovered, and the forest has regrown. And
some of it. Now,
I would like to go out there and see it.
I was watching a video today about it. It's one of the news stories. It's called Mount St. Helen, Out of the Ashes. It was really good because it shows how the forestry company that was cutting down trees that owns most of the land, they were cutting down trees when the mountain erupted. And the thing is, every tree within a 15-mile swath of which way the blast went. Now, there was a lady on the other side of the mountain when it blew up. She didn't even know it exploded because the sound didn't go that way. The sound went one direction.
Oh, that's so interesting.
She says that they didn't even notice it until the river started to fill with mud. But anyhow, if you look at a lot of the video of it, you see there the trees are just mowed down, and you can see the actual flow of the mud and the pilot the explosion.
Yeah.
And most of the trees are still like that. Now, the company that was doing logging, they actually planted a bunch of trees 10 or 15 years ago, and you can actually see the line of where they stopped growing trees, and the land is still not recovered from that. And to this day, there's a lake there that a guy found a fish in. Now, you think, well, that's not a big deal, but the thing is, this lake was made because of the eruption, and there were no fish there.
Yeah.
So now they found two fish in there, and they don't know how they got there. So it's coming back, but it still looks like it did back then. But to this day, they're still saying that they see Bigfoot on the mountain. And they're still finding Bigfoot tracks and all that. So there are a lot of Bigfoots in that area.
I'd love to get out that way. I just think it would be so amazing to be able to go and just, like, look for Bigfoot. Even though we have them here in Ohio, but, you know, it's still, it would just be really cool.
I was looking, and it's like an hour, maybe 2 hour drive from Seattle.
Okay. That'd be cool.
So it's,
we need to go.
It's within our reason to get out there. I mean, we have family out there.
We do. Cousin. My godfather lives out that way. He said we can come visit anytime. There was a report here. There was an article in some kind of academic journal about the animals that were killed in the 1980 volcanic eruption. And it said that many but not all animals occupying the Mount St. Helens blast zone died from suffocation, explosive shock, traumatic shock, falling timbers, and pumice blocks. All of the bodies were examined, were partially burned. And it said the team working on that study located over 24 bodies that of dead animals that indicated that they were in the blast zone themselves, but they fell under like 20 to 60 centimeters of ash. And I don't know, it was just interesting that Bigfoot corpses found in the sand by the, it says by the helicopter associated with the Army Corps of Engineers, and they came and removed those bodies.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about.
You know, like, I'm wondering if they were like blown out, you know.
A lot of them probably were.
Just like blown yards flying away. Through the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of them were because the pyroclastic flows were flowing down the mountain at up to 600 miles an hour.
Wow. That's crazy. But, you know, there was, here's another report of people seeing the helicopters with the Bigfoot bodies mm-hmm. in that net. And they reported them as very hairy, covered in ash, and Bigfoot-like.
Yeah.
Scary. I would, you know, you just look up and here's a Bigfoot flying through
flying
the air.
Flying Bigfoots.
Well, that's raining Bigfoots. Funny, but not funny, right?
No, it's not. But we talk about it all the time, how the Northwest has got a lot of Bigfoot. I mean, we have a lot of Bigfoot in this area, but it's like the Mecca out there.
Yeah.
And I think it's very, very, very possible that Mount St. Helens was full of Bigfoot and probably killed, they say, what, 5 or 6 that they found the bodies or whatever, but it's probably killed a lot more because there were people up there that never found the bodies.
Yeah.
And being the largest landslide in U.S. history, it filled the whole valley with mud and that, so whatever was underneath that will never be found.
Maybe unless they excavate it, you know, at some point. Like, yeah. Remember like Pompeii that was totally covered mm-hmm. in volcanic ash and they didn't find those body. I don't want to say bodies because I think they were
like shells, yeah.
or something. Until thousands of years yeah. later, which is so fascinating.
But I think hundreds and hundreds of Bigfoots died when
yeah.
that erupted. And who knows, maybe that's why the population's not that big anymore, because that was probably their Mecca.
Maybe.
And that's what, you know, most of them lived on there, because like I said earlier, the Native Americans never even went up on that mountain. But yet they knew that they were up there.
Right.
So they had to have seen them.
There
was I saw a photo of the footprints in an article in 1934 of Bigfoot footprints on the mountain, and it was covered with snow, so there was, you know, it's possible.
Was the famous Gimlin Patterson film, was that in Washington or was that California?
That I don't know.
I don't know either. I
have to look that up.
I thought it was up that way.
It was in that area.
Yeah, but that was 64. Maybe? I don't know, it was in the 60s. So, you know, that's only give or take 20 years from the explosion. So you don't think of, you know, natural disasters affecting, mm-hmm. it affects us, but you just don't think of all the, you know, indigenous animals that are there.
It's interesting because it's a great study in the world or the earth, because a lot of the animals that are alive in that area right now the elk and all that are going back to it. But most of the animals that did survive were underground animals.
Oh.
Like groundhogs and,
groundhogs.
You know, that was, they survived. And that shows you too of like when the dinosaur extinction happened, a lot of the animals that survived were underground animals.
Sharks are in the water.
Yep.
So, being the 40th anniversary of the explosion, we just wanted to bring you this story. We just thought it was so fascinating. You know,
40 years ago.
40.
40.
Oh, my gosh. That means I'm
But like I say, old. I still remember seeing, and that's one thing that sticks out in my mind about it. I don't remember seeing on the news. I don't remember that, but I do remember seeing the ash on the windowsill of our house here in Toledo.
Oh, my gosh. Which yeah, I mean,
is thousands of miles away or 2,000 miles away, and it would take me 8 days to ride my bike there.
You can do it. Pedal faster, Joe. Run, Forrest, run. He just keeps running. He keeps pedaling.
When I hit the water, I'll stop.
Okay, so I mentioned earlier about gold mining.
Yeah.
Guess what I did?
Did you mine for gold?
I'm going to.
Oh, okay.
I saw online, because I was watching these videos on YouTube mm-hmm. about people panning for gold. And that was because, you know, I want to go to the Arkansas diamond mines, and I'm just dying to like just go out and look and research for some type of treasure, right? So I saw this video of these people finding gold
mm-hmm.
in, I don't even know, it might have been Australia.
Okay.
But they were digging in the dirt, and then yeah. there was a thing about this guy panning for gold and how you do it. I was like, oh my God, that looks like so much fun. So I bought a bag of dirt from this gold mine in, is it Arizona? It's either Arizona or Colorado. I can't remember. And they send you a bag of dirt.
Oh, cool.
And a pan. And you can, and it's guaranteed to have gold in it.
Oh, that's cool.
And it could either have flakes or nuggets.
Yeah.
But you can pan your own gold and then you get to keep it. And it was only like $20.
Oh, that's cool.
So I bought a little thing of dirt.
Uh-huh.
And they ship it to you, and then you can pan for gold. I just thought it was a really
fun
thing to do during the quarantine.
And you can say that you found gold in Toledo, Ohio.
I found gold, but they are actually, there is gold in the rivers in Toledo, or not Toledo, in Ohio. Looking up on internet. There's a couple of rivers in Ohio, not in our area, that you can go and pan for gold. People are finding gold. Well, they used to. I don't know if they are anymore. It's like, who goes out and pans for gold in Ohio, right? But I was like, just doing some research because I just thought it would be really fun because I love treasure hunting. I love watching those videos of people who go and dive under the water and find cell phones and rings and all that fun
but
stuff.
But that would be interesting because down in like Hocking Hills area and all that, who knows?
Yeah, some of the rivers were down that way. They're near, one was near Columbus.
Yeah.
You know, the areas we go to, Newark and all that. And then there was one, I think it was probably up by the Cuyahoga, you know, area. And I can't remember the other one was, but one of those little like lazy rivers but I thought that was really fun.
We should do that someday. When we go out to Newark, Ohio, we'll just go over to some of those rivers. And there's a place I ride my bike in.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, the actual trail that you ride your bike on got washed out from that river.
Oh,
so I wonder if
there
is. So with as much rain as that, it's really stirred up a lot of sediment. We should try it.
Why not?
Let's do it.
And, you know, just on a rabbit hole, but do you remember when we talked about the pirates in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
in the show where they believe that the pirates had buried gold up in, near the Ohio River too?
Yeah.
So, you know,
cave in the Rock, Illinois.
That's right. But just pray for the Bigfoots that we lost.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can, you know, leave them alone and just let them be and live their lives happily. I just, you know, one thing I always wonder is like, what's their lifespan?
Well, that's one thing that I was saying is maybe that's why they don't reproduce as much, why there's not so many, is their lifespan is a lot longer and their metabolism is a lot slower. So they don't reproduce as much. And, you know, like me, when me and Ken Guerra were talking about it, that's one thing he says is he thinks there's only about 1,700 Bigfoot in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling him, how do we know that they don't live 300 or 400 years and they only have babies?
Yeah.
You know, when they're 100 or 200 years old, who knows?
Yeah. Cause you know, you look at the Galapagos turtles, they're 100 years old and they're still having turtle babies.
Yeah.
Right. And then you look at the great apes. And their lifespan is like 50 to 60 years, which is relatively long for, I would think, for an animal.
Out in the wild like
a
that.
A non-human, I guess you would call it. I identify as non-human.
Yeah, because we wear clothes and can go to the grocery store and get food and all that. And not them. They have to
eat bugs.
Bugs and grapes and berries.
Oh, I do have an update.
Oh.
A ghost story update.
Oh, okay.
I know, I love to overshare. I was sitting in my living room. So you know how I rearranged my living room, right? So I took
I do, but the listener doesn't.
Okay, so I'm going to explain. So I took my couch out of my living room and put my dining room table in my living room, put my couch in my dining room.
Okay.
Because it's small and, you know, it's just me. So like I can sit, because I was working from home, I could sit at the dining room table and still watch the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I was sitting at the dining room table and like my back's to my window. And then, so like it's my dining room table and then a little space. And then the television's against the wall. And I'm looking down at my computer, do, 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 tap, 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 tap. And I look up and I see a shadow go in front. Oops, I just hit the mic. A shadow walk in front of the TV from the dining room towards the front door.
Oh.
And it was weird because normally you see him out of the corner of your eye, right? You know, like we've seen that a couple times at the house, but this like passed and I blinked my eyes because I thought, well, maybe I have a floater or something, But it was like, I don't have a floater and it's not my mascara, you know. Mm-hmm. It was just really strange. I didn't have my glasses on because, you know, I was on the computer. Yeah. So I would take them off because I can't see. But I just looked up briefly and just saw something going in front of the TV. And it was so weird. And I just sat there like, okay. You know, you try to like think like, am I seeing something? Or next am time, I, or am I seeing something?
Next time that happens, you have to look up and go, hi.
I know. I think it was Dad. Something. But I don't know.
Yeah.
I did have a dream about Dad again. And I can't remember what it was.
Oh.
But it was interesting. But anyways, I don't know about you or if it's just these times, you know, like I'm sure listeners are probably, are you having like very, very strange dreams lately? Like very weird and what's the word I want to use?
Bizarre?
Yeah, bizarre, but very lucid. Like,
oh yeah.
Dreams?
But I am on purpose though. I've been doing that dream thing. And
tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Like, so I'm going to start making videos of this too. So on YouTube, you can go on YouTube and actually type in subliminal message for dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And there's everything out there. I mean, everything is there, for whether you want to get money, whether you want to get lose weight while you're asleep, which how, but there's videos out there and I'm going to make some that help you go to sleep and like, actually help you dream.
Like meditation? Yeah. Like you listen to them and then you fall asleep? Yep. Or mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And there's different wavelengths that you listen to for different things. But I've been listening to them on purpose trying to have weird dreams.
Okay.
And the one time I tried it, you know, I do mainly the wake with energy ones right now. But I did do one about dreaming and I must have had 60 weird dreams that were just like freaky. And I'm like, it was so bad I rolled over and turned YouTube off on my phone.
Oh my God.
Because
that's funny.
I was only asleep for about 10 minutes. And I had like 30 just freaky, weird dreams. So and I think strange. It is the subliminal message, whoever's doing it, is putting those in your mind.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's obviously what it is because you can lay in bed and you'll hear like a squirrel running across the roof in your dream. It'll be like Santa Claus on your roof or something.
Yeah. I didn't know if it was like kind of common with everybody because we're all under a lot of stress.
It could be.
I'm having nightmares like bad. Like I'll fall asleep for like 10 minutes and have a terrible dream, wake up and I can't go back to sleep.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, ugh.
Well, see, that's the thing. I've been talking to a lot of people.
I need to try some of those, you know, for anxiety or
And that's
calming.
Why I'm going to start making them because I've been talking to a lot of people that have been just saying the exact same thing you have that they can't, nobody can sleep right now.
Yeah.
Nobody can get stressful. To sleep. Yeah. It's because of the stress.
Stress sucks. I don't like it. I like any of it.
Maybe on our next show, I'll do a meditation session.
Oh, that'd be fun.
On
that
our
would
next
be
show
cool.
For everybody. Maybe get everybody in a little better mood. But, you know, get out there, walk in the park.
Yeah.
Do something. And don't, when you walk in the park, don't look at the trail. Although you got to watch where you're walking. But look up. Look at the colors of the leaves. Look at, listen to the sounds. And what that does is it gets you out of that state of mind to where you can't be depressed if you're looking up because you're the physical aspects of your body, your shoulders have to be slumped over. You got to be looking down, you know, all that.
Yeah.
Get up, look at that, breathe in the air, all that jazz. But maybe on our next show, I'll do
a
meditation thing.
Yeah. We need to talk about like calming and meditation and all that good stuff. But anyways, everybody. Like,
and we also have a special guest coming up.
Ooh.
We have a special guest coming up, and I'm not sure when it's going to come out because we're going to talk to her next week, Heather Arnold.
Yes, I'm
and
so excited.
I am so psyched about this because she is a giant, and I don't want to say expert because nobody's an expert in these, but she's a giant expert.
Yeah, she studies bones, ancient
archaeological.
That's it. Skeletons.
Uh-huh.
And fascinating. You guys are going to be blown away by this.
And
this
she did a lot of stuff in Aruba where they didn't take the skeletons when they found them. You know, the government didn't come in and take them. Yeah. So she did a lot of research on them.
So excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited. So that'll be in a couple weeks.
So stay tuned.
Stay tuned. But anyhow, I want to thank everybody for listening this week. Like I said, really thank you for being a listener. Thank you for hanging in with us. A lot of great shows coming up and probably a couple bad ones, but you know, that's the way we are.
They're all great, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
But no, yeah, we're really, really thankful that you guys are sticking through us through these times. Hopefully that we're bringing you some entertainment and give you a little break from stressful lives and jobs and works and all that fun stuff. So, you know, you can be, we'll be your escapism.
Get out on your bicycle, ride your bicycle, and tell me how many miles you've rode.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can match you.
You do a
challenge.
Yeah. All right.
So, going with the battle that happened with the Bigfoot and the men in the cabin, let's play a little War by Dead End 5. One of my favorite videos we made.
Yeah, so excited to see it.
Check that out on YouTube also. But anyways, thanks everyone for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good week.
Bye-bye. This is the war inside my head. This is the truth.